Welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. At Databook, we explore the transformation of healthcare through technology and innovation. I'm Ron Southwick, Lead Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Our guest today is Fawad Butt, the CEO and co-founder of Penguin AI. He has significant experience in healthcare technology, and he talks about why artificial intelligence adoption is going to be accelerating in healthcare. He talks about the ways healthcare organizations should be thinking about AI, the push for return on investment in AI, how AI could play a bigger role in prior authorization, and so much more. It's a great discussion. Thanks for joining us. This is Databook. Thanks for joining us. We're talking today with Fawad Butt, the CEO and co-founder of Penguin AI. He brings deep experience in healthcare technology, working at Kaiser Permanente, UnitedHealthcare, and Optum. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Looking forward to the conversation. Let's start a little bit. Just talk about your healthcare journey and building Penguin AI.
Yeah, look, so maybe I'll start with the healthcare journey and we'll talk a little bit about Penguin AI afterwards. I was fortunate enough to be a part of Kaiser Permanente in the early 2010s. When they were in the process of building out their data strategy. And I was fortunate enough to be brought in as their chief data governance officer and then ultimately became their chief data officer. And that's kind of really where my healthcare journey began, which was at Kaiser. Before that, I knew of healthcare. I consumed healthcare. My wife's a pharmacist. I have uncles and cousins who are physicians. So I'd been around it. But not in an immersive way. But Kaiser was a great place for me to learn about healthcare just because they're an integrated health system. They have both the payer side, the provider side, the pharmacies, the labs, and so forth. So that's kind of where I learned healthcare. And in one respect, I don't think there's a better place to learn healthcare than at Kaiser Permanente, especially the US healthcare system, because they've simplified it to the best of their abilities. And so and part of my journey in healthcare was to actually take the time and understand it, right? So you get the job, you have the title, you have the team, but really, when it comes to data, a lot of the data that we use in healthcare is created as a result of some process, right? So it's not just, so if you're going to manage the data, you have to understand what the processes are that are generating this. So for the first 2 years at Kaiser, I would take the Fridays and I would spend the Friday in a different setting. So I would be in actuarial department one Friday, I'd be in a lab another Friday, I'd be in the hospital another Friday. And part of that was for me to learn the processes that were necessary for me to be efficiently manage the data. So that's where I started, became their chief data officer, built their infrastructure, teams, technology, and platforms. And then got the call to join UnitedHealthcare, the insurance side of the business, as their first chief data and analytics officer. So went there, was responsible for very similar activities, built the team, built the foundation. United was spending, hundreds of millions of dollars on data and AI analytics capabilities and AI capabilities. And I was fortunate enough to be able to organize that. And then I got the ask to take over the Optum responsibility as the Optum Chief Data Officer. And Optum, as you know, is the back office for the US healthcare ecosystem. So there we manage teams and responsibilities related to all the back office processes, everything from payment integrity to prior authorization and utilization management, claims adjudication, fraud, waste, and abuse, and so forth. So that's kind of where I got my healthcare chops, was at big healthcare across the US. And after I left Optum, I took a little bit of time off and went into venture capital as an operating partner at Canvas Ventures and spent some time there. And that's where I got to really engage with the founder ecosystem and just fell in love with the ideas and the audacity that people were bringing to the table. And then finally, when large language models became available and became a thing that was easily accessible, it was time for me to build Penguin. And I brought the band together. A lot of the people that started Penguin with me as co-founders have worked with me in the past at one of the three organizations that I've mentioned.
Well, you obviously bring experience from sort of like, the provider side, the payer side. So you've got to really see a lot of the strengths and what they do well, and also where things can be improved, which seems to play in nicely with the role that you have now.
Thank you. Yeah, no, for sure. I think part of the way I look at healthcare is that for a long time we've been waiting in healthcare for somebody from outside to innovate and give us the solution. And my thesis is that healthcare is not like other businesses. It's just so nuanced in the US that you need people that understand the business to be able to come up with ideas that are not only just new ways of doing things, but also can incorporate into the existing processes. And I think that takes a lot of knowledge and understanding. And we think the team that we have at Penguin AI, which is over 100 years of healthcare experience collectively, I think it brings something unique to the table. We're very different than a Google or an Amazon or a Databricks. We're subject matter experts in this space.
And do you feel like that's important? Because I mean, a lot of times, especially you go to like conferences, there's some very interesting tools, but sometimes they're brought from those outside the healthcare industry, and then you hear from health and saying people are bringing interesting solutions, but they don't really solve a problem that I actually have. So
That's
how
right.
important is it to have that healthcare experience if you're really going to tackle some of these challenges?
I think that, look, the healthcare experience comes in handy in a couple of ways. One is that you need to understand the solution that you're building for your customer, right? So if you don't have that experience, you're kind of taking a shot in the dark. But I think the second thing that is probably even more critical is that it's not good enough to build solutions that look cool. You want to build solutions that are adoptable. And for that, you need to think about the existing processes, the existing systems, the existing technology, the integrations of how all that's going to work. And I think that's why healthcare experience, especially experience on the data side and the integration side and the flow of information, I think those are very critical understandings. Otherwise, you could build really exciting solutions, but the change management and implementation of them becomes a nightmare. And really, I think that's why the experience is necessary.
So now Penguin's working with different organizations in terms of like finding ways to streamline billing, coding, to maybe capture some of that money that sort of gets lost in the system.
Yeah, so we work on the payer side and the provider side. On the payer side, our primary use cases are utilization management and prior authorization, HCC coding and risk adjustment, and then we're doing some work around payment integrity. So I think those are three big use cases for us on the payer side. On the provider side, there are a number of use cases that I bucket into revenue cycle management. That could be so anything from claim scrubbing to medical coding to appeals management, and so forth. So there's a lot there. But then there are also things like chart summarization or a patient 360. Those are areas where we're able to go in. So we operate. I mean, our thesis is that if you build a foundation, if you build a connectivity to all the data, things like Epic and Cerner and Athena and Waystar and all the others that are out in the ecosystem, and then you build the privacy engine so that you can de-identify this data, redact information, and govern it in an appropriate way. And then you build a model layer where you have out-of-the-box models for each one of these categories of work that we're talking about. That platform allows you to put multiple use cases on top, right? Because right now a lot of healthcare is siloed, and the silos are creating tremendous problems in terms of data access, data use, and data management. And I think part of what we're trying to do is sort of simplify that entire environment by bringing the right data into the platform and then being able to plug in a lot of the use cases. So we think building the foundation layer first, it will give our customers and us a leg up longer term in terms of being able to do more than one thing. Otherwise, they're going to have to repeat what they did in the last cycle, which is buy point solutions for each one of these categories. And this time, the problem's going to be amplified because it's not just the data, but the AI that they have to govern as well.
Well, you mentioned prior authorization. It's such a hot topic in healthcare. I mean, payers obviously viewed as a key tool to control costs. Providers have been frustrated by saying it's been overused too much to delay or deny care when it's been genuinely necessary. There was a lot of enthusiasm about AI maybe reducing friction in this area, like coming up with ways to reduce some of the friction, kind of get rid of like the claims that everybody knows is going to get approved anyway. Hasn't happened a lot yet in view of a lot of people. Do you feel like at some point you're going to start seeing the benefits of where AI can really help simplify and reduce some of the tension in the prior authorization area?
I think so. I think the technology is actually evolving a lot quicker to be able to do that. If you sort of, I think there are two problems here. There's a technology problem and there's a trust problem. So the technology problem is solvable in the sense that we're building the right technology to take that friction out. For example, there's no need for a 7-day return cycle on a prior authorization request. I mean, a prior authorization request should be adjudicated real time. And then the feedback given back to the provider real time so they know what's missing. Because a lot of the requests that get denied then get appealed. And so that rework happens twice, both for the provider and the payer. And so they have to, so we can take that friction out. So I think some of that is solvable. What providers want is clear guidelines. For what they're supposed to submit. And then they want help in figuring out if I'm submitting this to UHC versus Elevance, what's the right guideline to choose and what documents do I need to submit? They want simplification on that. So we can do that with technology. I think technology is able to do that. The challenge that I think a lot of payers have is around trust, right? In the sense that theoretically, it's easy for us to sit back and say, why don't we just take all this friction out? And make the system frictionless. The challenge there is that as somebody that sat on the other side, on the payers, and managed teams that dealt with payment integrity and fraud, waste, and abuse, I can tell you that there are bad actors out there that are trying to defraud the system to the tune of billions of dollars a month, right? And according to CMS estimates, 10 plus billion dollars a month is what they're trying to defraud. And they're using processes like prior auth for procedures that they're never going to do, claims for procedures that were never done, upcoding and billing for things that shouldn't be upcoded. So there's a trust issue between the payers and providers. And I don't know if we are on the right path to solve that. With a place where you could solve that are systems like UPMC or Kaiser Permanente, where the payer and provider organizations are aligned. I think it's easier to solve there, and I think we can start by solving there because the trust is inbuilt, and then we can replicate that in other places. But I think outside of that, it's tough to do.
Well, I know Penguin's doing some work with UPMC. Could you talk about some of the work you're doing with them?
Yeah, UPMC is an exceptional partner. We just announced at Health or the data partnership with the Ahavi platform. So one of the things that we're doing with UPMC is that we've partnered on access to de-identified data. So UPMC has built this platform called Ahavi. They've brought in tremendous amount of longitudinal records related to patients that have been de-identified that are available, and they're sharing this with very few trusted parties. And we were fortunate enough to be one of those trusted parties, in fact, the first ones. So we're using this data to build new AI models. Because I think, one of the things that we need are specialized models in healthcare. You can use a Gemini or an OpenAI or a Llama or a Mistral, but the problem is that they're primarily trained on publicly available data. And to get to the nuance, get to the edge cases, you need more than that. You need specific data. And we have access to that data through the UPMC partnership. So we're building models that are highly accurate. They are more diverse in terms of being able to respond to requests that are more, towards the edge versus the center. So that's one way. It's also UPMC is an investor in Penguin AI. So they were part of our Series A round. We announced that as well, and we're doing some additional work with them that we'll be announcing soon, beyond the ones that the things that we've discussed.
Well, a lot going on there. I just wanted to get some of your input or insights, I should say, on just AI governance in general. Usually not the sexiest of topic in the world, but increasingly important for different health systems. And again, you've seen
Yeah.
spread the whole health system from different angles. What do health systems, healthcare organizations need to be thinking about in terms of like really smart approaches to AI governance?
Yeah, I think, look, there's a spectrum that we're going to have to get comfortable with of governance, right? There's the absolute governance and there's no governance. And then there's a spectrum that's in between that. And I think part of what we have done classically in terms of risk management at enterprises is that we take the risk and we take the probability of the risk and then we multiply those and then we put a value next to it and we say, this is the risk. I think that model just doesn't work anymore because there is going to be inherent risk in using AI, right? But so part of it is that organizations have to come up with better frameworks and better methods to get comfortable with the assumption of risk. The second thing I would say is that AI governance is a journey, just like data governance was a journey. Right. So if you're an organization that's trying to come up with the most robust AI governance model before you start deploying AI, you're going to be waiting for 5 years and you're going to miss a lot of windows and may not exist as an entity, given some of the efficiencies that are available through AI that your competitors are going to adopt. So I do think that there is an opportunity to just sort of reorient around risk and then build the right processes. So the things that people really care about that they're agreed on, I think maybe start there. So for example, you want to redact your PII and PHI before you feed it to the models. Yeah, do that. That should be part of AI governance. You want to have a sense of which data sets are being used to feed the models. Yeah, you can do a source analysis and you can put some restrictions around that. You want to put some guardrails around the model to be able to say you can't ask it information that can lead to nefarious outputs. So you can do things like that. So do things like that in a basic fashion and test out in a gated environment, so to speak. And I think that's how you build muscle around governance. Otherwise, what you're going to do is you're going to be paralyzed. You're going to be waiting for third parties to solution for you. And I think governance is going to have to be, a custom fit for each organization, at least in the first couple of years of this. And then maybe we'll come to off-the-shelf things. But in the beginning, you have to get comfortable with measuring your processes and then building that governance framework that is just okay enough for you, not perfect, but gets you to a point where you can experiment.
And the description of a journey is an interesting one. So often you kind of, again, healthcare usually wants to be cautious and methodical. In most cases, that's usually the right way to go. We can talk about protecting patient health and safety and even healthcare information, financial information. But if you go too slow, you seem to be suggesting there's a real chance that organizations are not going to get the benefits they could be getting or really fall behind their competitors.
Yeah, that and also you have to sort of start with the low-hanging fruit. And the way I sort of think about it, you have to do a risk-reward matrix, right? So some things are low risk, some things are high risk, some things are low reward, some things are high reward. You want to do the things that are low risk and high reward first. And to me, those tend to be administrative processes and non-clinical uses. If you want to start with high risk, high reward, you would start with clinical, but that would be the wrong place to go. Right? Because now you're playing with patients' outcome, patient lives, patient impact. Whereas if you're starting with claims adjudication, I mean, it's a pretty bad process to start with. How much worse could it get, honestly? So I think it's just it's a risk management and risk identification exercise that needs to be done. I would start with things that are low hanging and low risk, which to me are mostly administrative process, prior auth, risk adjustment, medical coding, ACC identification. Those are places where there's no clinical risk, really. And the only thing we can do is make the process a little better because it sucks right now.
I had to stifle a laugh when you said how much worse could it get? So that was but that's laughing because it's funny and because it's true. But yeah, that's when. But as you talk about risk, as you eventually get into the clinical area, it's almost like the way you think about risk is going to have to be maybe different. Because I mean, obviously, you don't want to have bad outcomes, and you certainly don't have fatalities. But at some point, there probably is going to be a patient death that's tied to an AI program making an error. I mean, there's also medical errors contributing to thousands of deaths right now too.
That's
So
right. There's a lack of data. There are thousands of deaths that happen every year because we don't have the right data in front of the physician, and the physician ends up making a decision with incomplete information, and that ends up impacting people's lives. So I think that happens a lot, and I think physicians are actually more comfortable with that than not. But I do think that AI should not be in a position, at least until we get high fidelity models custom built for healthcare, where it's recommending the next best action, or where it's recommending the amount of drug or a specific drug you should go on. Or it could make recommendations for procedures, but then it should be validated by a human. So it's the AI plus the human construct that I think you got to start with. You ask the AI to do the grunt work, but then you ask the human to validate and confirm that this is the right answer. I think that's where you have to go for all processes, but especially for clinical.
And it seems like at least there's been some studies showing like there's a lot of enthusiasm in the healthcare organizations for using AI for back-end operations, streamline claims, things like that. There's a little bit more caution on the clinical side, it would seem. Is
Yeah,
that
I
your
mean,
perspective
we
as well?
talk to providers all the time, and they want simple things. They don't want rocket science. They don't want to be replaced. They want to be augmented. They want a mech suit that makes them to be able to do five times more work than they can do today. They don't want a little, R2D2 beeping next to them. They really want enablement as part of this AI journey. And I think to be able to do that, we can do simple things, right? So you're a new patient, you go to see a doctor, it's a physician that you've not seen before, physician pulls your records, get 700 pages of information. How about we simplify that, right? The physician doesn't have an hour and a half to review your file. They have 15 minutes to see you and 3 minutes to prepare before you show up. So how about we summarize the 700 pages of records and surface up the most important information and give the physician the opportunity to reference check that in the 3 to 5 minutes that they have before they walk in to see the patient. Like that's the kind of stuff that I think gives superhuman strengths to the physician, and those are the kind of things that we like to go after.
Well, we're on the cusp of a new year. What do you see happening with AI and healthcare in 2026?
I think the 2026, in my opinion, from my vantage point at least, is going to be the year of the adoption. I think 2024 was excitement. 2025 was hype, and a little bit of paralysis. I think 2026 is really where adoption is going to be accelerating, both on the payer side and the provider side. What we saw in 25 was that the providers adopted AI a lot quicker than the payers did. What we're seeing in the second half of 25 is that the payers are trying to catch up. And I think what I'm going to see in 2026 is providers are going to accelerate, payers are going to accelerate. You're going to see this adoption cycle that is quicker than anybody expects. And we see that in our pipeline. We see that in the conversations that we're having with both payers and providers. So I think that's going to happen quicker. I do think that there are going to be certain areas where there's going to be le less debate about governance and risk. I think the admin processes are top of the funnel on that in that area. Not to say that you don't need governance. It's just that governance shouldn't be overblown. You can deploy these things. Others are deploying. You're going to see reference implementations at your competitors, which is going to give you the opportunity to push for this within your organization. So I think that's kind of what I predict. I think the models are going to get smarter, which is starting to happen a little more. Although I was very disappointed with GPT-5 because it had sort of hit a wall. I think Gemini 3 has brought some new hope that there's some more squeeze here in terms of model accuracy. I think that's going to continue for sure. And then the last thing I would say is that I do think a lot of the time this year was spent on building organizational structures inside of large healthcare enterprises to be able to adopt and implement AI. And so you're going to see the chief AI officer become a more prevalent role across organizations, both payers and providers. Whereas I think maybe 5% or 10% of them have a role like that. I wouldn't be surprised if we end the year next year with 30, 40, 50% of the organizations either hired or hiring.
Do you see from providers, even payers for that matter, a greater desire to see a faster return on investment? Because I've been hearing from folks saying that they can't wait 2, 3 years for some ROI at this point, that they need an accelerated timetable to see some payoff for their investments. Are you seeing that as well?
100%. We actually are not seeing this. We're promising it. We're delivering it. So, we do an ROI analysis before we sign on any customer. And the ROI is to the customer that we analyze. And so we have thresholds which have to be met for us to take on a customer. And the whole sole purpose of doing all of this is to ensure that within 120 days, the customer can see actual dollar value ROI on their books. So that to me is the new norm for AI. AI is not like applications that we were implementing 10 years ago, where you spend 3 years implementing it and then you wait to optimize it and then you start to see some values in the fourth or fifth year. I think here people are looking at quarters. Is it going to be 1 quarter or 2 quarters? But that's the path that we see. I think if you're doing an AI project and the ROI is expected in more than 2 quarters, you're kind of doing it wrong.
Didn't want to ask, and this time is really flying away on us, but I did want to ask, like, maybe what advice you have now that you've been involved with building a company. What's the advice that you would have for other people that are building their own companies, or maybe what's good lessons you've learned, or something maybe you wish you knew a little earlier?
Yeah, look, I think the entrepreneur journey is the journey is more complicated than you ever imagine. And it's individually complicated given your commitments at home and your family and the financial commitments you have as well as what you're trying to build. So the thing that I tell entrepreneurs is that look, it's an all-in game. And it's an all-in game all the time. Right? It's not an all-in game between 9 to 5. It's an all-in game between 5 a.m. to till you go to sleep. And if you're not ready for that, you should reconsider because it's going to take everything you have and then some. So it's quite the journey. But I also think the flip side of it is that it is the most rewarding job I've ever had in my entire life. Right? So I've had a lot of great jobs according to people, but and I've enjoyed them immensely, and I've had the opportunity to build and impact the healthcare system across this country at scale. But this is the most fun job I've ever had. It's because I get to build something that is something that I believe has been lacking from that experience at large enterprises, and then trying to change the healthcare ecosystem, trying to test out new ideas, trying to change customer behavior and adoption patterns. And if you're like me and you enjoy those things, there's no better thing to do than be an entrepreneur. But it does take a lot of commitment. It takes everything. There's never an end to priorities or problems. In the beginning, it's about hiring a team or building a product, and then it's about finding customers, and then about tweaking pricing, and then it's about raising money, and then it's about competition management, then it's about PR. Like it just never ends. So you have to be a marathon runner to be able to handle this. But if you are, it's an extremely rewarding exercise.
Definitely a marathon, not a sprint, for sure. Excellent. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate the conversation. This has been great.
Well, thank you for the opportunity again. It's been fantastic.
Thanks for listening to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, in-depth analysis, and deeper dives on the big issues in the world of healthcare, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick. Thanks for joining us. Take care.